Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Please be seated. Good morning. Our first case is 2022-0316 in the matter of Josh Shahad and Karen Alder in her official capacity as Finance Director of the City of Cincinnati and Dave Yost in his official capacity as Ohio Attorney General. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Alt. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Robert Alt, and I am counsel for appellant Josh Shahad. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Tax law is often very complicated, but at its core, this case asks a straightforward question. Does the City of Cincinnati have the authority to tax the income of a non-resident worker, a commuter, who did not commute? For 73 years, the answer dictated by this court's case law has been clear. No. No, because the municipality lacks taxing jurisdiction, and taxation without jurisdiction violates due process. Today, by rejecting the jurisdictional and due process analysis this court consistently has employed in intrastate municipal income tax cases, the city asked this court.
I'm having a hard time understanding how the federal due process clause has anything to do with how the state decides to allocate taxation. So help me understand. You know, I get there's maybe some loose language in some of our cases, but I've never seen anything from the U.S. Supreme Court that would suggest that this issue goes beyond a kind of state sovereignty kind of issue.
Yes, Your Honor. Obviously, the U.S. Supreme Court probably has not had the opportunity to deal with municipal income taxation in Ohio, but this court has repeatedly since 1950. And if you look back to in 1950, the case of Engle versus the City of Toledo, this court borrowed from the Supreme Court's decision in State of Wisconsin versus J.C. Penney Company to adopt a fiscal relation test for municipal income tax, which requires that the tax bear a fiscal relation to the protections, opportunities, and benefits given by the taxing jurisdiction. In the absence of that, the court found that it violated due process. This court has applied federal due process or due process analysis in multiple cases since then, in McConnell versus the City of Columbus, in Thompson versus the City of Cincinnati, and more recently in Hillenmeyer versus Cleveland Board of Review. As to whether the sort of scope and extent of federal due process, once again, this court has found it to be coterminous with the due course of law provision. And in addition, I think the U.S. Supreme Court has found the term state in due process doesn't always simply mean state.
This is often analogized to minimum context analysis that you'd use for personal jurisdiction. We wouldn't say that a county or someone has to have minimum contacts with the city for a trial to take place there. We wouldn't say that violates the federal constitution. It's always minimum contacts has always been understood in the context of what a state has to do to exercise sovereignty over someone. Why is this any different?
So this court has never applied the minimum contacts analysis with regard to municipal income taxation, particularly intrastate. It has applied the fiscal relation test. It goes to whether or not the individual has received a sufficient benefit from the jurisdiction to justify that jurisdiction taxing it. This court in Hillenmeyer, I think, summed it up relatively clearly and said for there to be a jurisdiction, there has to be one of two things. There either has to be in personam jurisdiction, which is to say the individual is a resident of that particular jurisdiction. And there's no question. Then the jurisdiction can tax that individual's income any place in the world. or there has to be in rem jurisdiction over the work and the income earned within that jurisdiction. This makes sense for a couple of reasons. Under Ohio's constitution, the taxes we're talking about today are municipal income taxes. They're not state income taxes. And as such, the authority to issue those taxes arises under home rule. The limit of home rule jurisdiction is within the jurisdiction of that city. They don't have the authority to regulate beyond that jurisdiction. And so in that sense, the issue with in rem very much comports with the limits of the power of the jurisdiction seeking to engage in the tax.
What about the McLean case?
The Athens versus McLean?
Yes.
So in Athens, this court went ahead and upheld regulations, but it did not, contrary to what the city's assertions suggest, that any regulation constitutes a limitation. The authority of the legislature with regard to preempting or more specifically regulating municipal income tax under the Ohio Constitution is limited to just that, limiting that authority. It cannot expand that authority. And McLean said nothing of the sort. It didn't permit an expansion. Indeed, it is, I think, a bit peculiar to try and suggest that this is anything but an expansion rather than a limitation. Municipalities have the authority to tax only within their limits under home rule. Consistent with the home rule authority, Cincinnati's municipal code taxes non-residents only for income earned within the city. And yet HB 197 purports to permit Cincinnati to tax outside the limits of the city.
But going back to McLean, what we said was that the taxes can be imposed in strict accordance with the terms dictated by the legislation passed by the General Assembly. So I think you skipped over that. How do you harmonize that?
Once again, though, this court did not suggest that those limitations could, in fact, be used to expand the taxing authority of the jurisdiction. That would be impermissible under the Ohio Constitution.
Except the thing is that the legislature passed a law that said that this could happen. And I know you're challenging the constitutionality, but if we've said that the taxes have to be imposed in strict accordance with the terms dictated by legislation passed by the General Assembly, this was legislation passed by the General Assembly.
Yes, Your Honor. But in Athens, for instance, the court also struck down the 0.5% tax. Merely because the legislature passes a regulation does not mean that that constitutes a limitation. The court actually looked at the regulation in question to see whether or not it comported with the Constitution, and we're suggesting that this court should do the same thing here. It's not enough simply to say that they passed the legislation, that therefore operates as a limitation on taxation. That's not what this court held in Athens. In fact, by striking down the 0.5% assessment in order to operate that system of taxation, they made clear that some things may not actually meet that standard.
I guess I wouldn't, when it's the mode of taxation and how it needs to be done, I guess I wouldn't look at that as a limitation. That may be where we have a difference of opinion.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if you can explain.
Could you hear me okay?
Yeah, no, I just, okay. You, in terms of
but
the
if,
mode.
If the methods of taxation, and this really could be viewed as a method of taxation.
Your Honor, respectfully, I would disagree. This isn't the method of taxation. This goes to the authority to tax. Cincinnati's code defines non-resident income subject to income taxation as including compensation for work done, services performed or rendered, or activities conducted in the municipality. It's perfectly clear. The power under home rule allows a municipality to enforce taxation within its limits. This clearly expands the authority beyond the limits. This is not merely a means. This goes to what a municipality is able, has the authority, and has the jurisdiction to tax.
But if the exemption from home rule is provided by statute, and the statute says that you will, and it's interpreted by the Supreme Court, and the statute says this is the way that you can tax. These are the provisions in Chapter 7 of the revised code that say this is how municipal taxation is done. How is 29 any different?
Because it goes to a constitutional limitation.
And we're talking state now, correct?
It goes to the due process limitation.
Under the state constitution, not the federal.
This court has borrowed the analysis in Engle and in subsequent cases from the U.S. Constitution, and has clearly done so, citing to the Supreme Court's case in Schaefer.
So when you say we borrowed the analysis, though, are we applying? Your claim is still a federal constitutional claim, right? You're not saying that, you're not making a claim that there's a violation of the Ohio Constitution, are you?
This court has generally pointed to the federal constitution, although I think you could find it within the due course of law. Sometimes this court has simply referred to it as a violation of due process without citing specifically to which constitutional provision it's referring. That seems to lend itself towards a federal constitutional analysis, but it could arise under due course of law as well.
Have you developed that argument?
We raised it, I think, in the complaint, but we generally have cited to the decisions of this court with regard to due process. And on that point, I should be clear. If this court finds that federal due process does not apply with regard to questions of intrastate municipal taxation, that would overturn at least five cases of this court. This court has said that not once, but five separate times. And it has done so not just in interstate taxation cases, but at least in three separate occasions on intrastate taxation as well.
But you said we only borrowed. We didn't apply it.
No, it borrowed the analysis from Schaefer in the initial case and applied it, and it has applied it in multiple cases. But Your Honor, I'd like to go back to your previous question, which is to say, what makes it different in Section 29, and what makes it different is the fact that there are these constitutional issues as well as the home rule limitations, and the genuine concern here is the legislature cannot deem a constitutional requirement to be met. It cannot create jurisdiction by stating that jurisdiction exists, which is functionally what they've done by deeming work that was actually performed in one jurisdiction to have been performed in another where it was not. These are exactly the sorts of...
So the state legislature can clearly, clearly has plenary authority. Like the federal, so it's not a system of limited powers. The state legislature could clearly tax someone who works in Blue Ash and give that money to Cincinnati if it chooses to, or allocate it however it wants to, at least within the limits of our Constitution. Municipalities are instrumentalities of the state, as they've always been defined. Why can't the state then? I mean, isn't that really what the state is just doing? It's using its taxing power and allocating it how it chooses to? Why should we look at it like that?
Your Honor, I appreciate that question because that actually goes to, I think, one of the core issues in the dispute. That's not what they're doing. If, in fact, the state had done that, that would have been permissible. If the state had actually issued a state tax, they would have had jurisdiction over Mr. Shod. And they could have then taken those funds through the local government fund and allocated them to Cincinnati. That would have been wholly permissible. There's any number of policy judgments that they could have done to address this question. The one thing that they could not do is the one thing that they did do, which was to violate due process by attempting to expand the powers of the jurisdiction in Cincinnati to tax someone over whom the city of Cincinnati did not have jurisdiction.
So to not return to Pennoyer versus Neff, where there has to be physical presence, but because of technology, because of the changes in technology, your client worked for the city of Cincinnati, correct?
No, Your Honor.
All right, but your client was being supported by hardware, software, services in the city of Cincinnati that made it possible for him to work at home.
Your Honor, I would like to state this cases before this court on a 12B6 motion. There is nothing in evidence supporting the proposition that there was any equipment facilitating him. And in fact, you know, it's kind of an odd argument. This is actually a more antiquated view of computers, the idea that you're accessing a computer at a particular location. Perhaps there's one that's actually locked in his office, a server, but frequently now you're actually accessing computers on the cloud. The computer could have been in California. Does that mean that he should be subjected to the jurisdiction in California? No, that would be absurd. The test is not physical presence. The test that this court has applied is fiscal relation. And with regard to fiscal relation, the question is the benefits he receives, and those benefits are physical benefits. If, in fact, while he was on a Zoom call, he had a heart attack, it would not be the city of Cincinnati that would have provided services. It would have been the city of Blue Ash. By providing those tax dollars to Cincinnati, you're actually depriving the city that's providing the physical services of the revenues to which they would otherwise be entitled. Thank you. I would like to reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning,
Ms.
Chief
Menasche.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court, Diane Menasche and Dan Anderson on behalf of Karen Alder in her official capacity as Finance Director of the City of Cincinnati. Despite appellant's argument this morning and throughout its brief, this isn't a case about the city's limits or reach of their taxation power. This is a case about state sovereignty, more specifically about the power of the state legislature over an Ohio resident for work performed within Ohio. Our March 25th, 2020, in response to the governor's March 9th emergency declaration, our General Assembly unanimously, on a bipartisan basis, passed House Bill 197. Within that bill was Section 29, which temporarily, for municipal taxation purposes, mandated how the location of work should be deemed for employees who were displaced from their principal place of work due to the emergency order. Like what was done here, when our General Assembly legislates tax policy for work performed within our borders by Ohio citizens, due process has been satisfied. This is not the only time that opposing counsel has certainly raised the issue of the constitutionality of Section 29. As I know this court well knows, there were four cases in four different counties across the state of Ohio in the last 2 years. 12 judges have looked at the same arguments put forth by opposing counsel, 3 trial court judges and 9 appellate judges. Every single one of those judges in reviewing this case has, first of all, distinguished this case from Hillenmeyer, though acknowledging that it is certainly still good law. Every single one of those judges has also found that Section 29 is constitutional as applied to Ohio residents, and each of those judges has applied the rational basis test, or it's certainly at least referenced the rational basis test, and found that, in fact, there is a rational basis. I want to go back and address some of the arguments that opposing counsel raised and was asked just a few minutes ago.
This is a substantive due process claim, right? But it's also in this taxation area, rational basis has never been the test that federal courts have applied, right? So why would rational basis be the right test?
Well, Your Honor, I would first say that it's why we addressed the arguments in the order we did in our brief. I think if the general authority had the assembly had the authority to act here, and we know that Chad is an Ohio resident and all work was performed within Ohio, we know that due process is satisfied. So you don't even get to that argument with respect to the rational basis.
This court certainly has cases where it's suggested that this federal due process analysis applies to municipal taxation. I mean, what do we do with those?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that we addressed the application of the rational basis test and said, while we argue that we think that due process has been satisfied under the Ohio Constitution, should this court want to do a rational basis analysis, that there's certainly a rational basis here. First of all, I go back to where I began.
But again, I don't think anyone's arguing about rational basis. That's not their argument. The argument is whether this federal, the crux of the issue is whether this federal due process taxation analysis applies to municipal taxation. And we have cases that have suggested that it does. So I guess I'm asking you how we would distinguish those.
Well, first of all, I would say that with respect to the first argument that due process has been satisfied, the court doesn't necessarily need to distinguish. Should the court want to do the rational basis test for
okay,
all the
okay,
reasons?
Okay, I guess we could do the rational basis
right.
test, but that's not the test that anyone's used in this taxation context, right? That's not the test that the U.S. Supreme Court used. That's not the test that your adversary is advocating for. So.
They're advocating for their physical presence.
Right. So the question is, how do we distinguish these cases that we have that says that test applies?
Well, Your Honor, we know from Quill and Wayfair that physical presence is no longer required, and that physical presence is truly an elastic concept, particularly as time has evolved and technology has evolved. And it's not a static concept. And I want to say, in response to one of the things that opposing counsel just argued, that there is no evidence in the record with respect to this technological connection. And that was part of his physical presence argument, that he needs to be physically present. We know that legislative choice is not subject to courtroom fact-finding and may be based on rational speculation unsupported by data. That's the Pickaway County skilled gaming case. There isn't a need to actually have evidence, right? Rational speculation with respect to Shad and the General Assembly finding on a rational basis that he remained connected to his employer in the city of Cincinnati is not any less true because there's an absence of evidence here. So going back to the physical presence question, first of all, I would say because this is a state issue and not a city issue, jurisdiction isn't an issue because we know that Shad was an Ohio resident and all of the work performed is within Ohio.
But again, I'll try just one more time to ask you this question. We have cases that say that physical presence test applies to municipal taxation. How should we deal with those cases if we're going to rule in your favor?
Well, then you can say that physical presence in its
Do we say they're wrong? Do we distinguish them? Do we overturn them? Help me understand.
Sure, I think we look to Quill and Wayfair and say if physical presence is required, physical presence doesn't mean Shad has to be in Cincinnati.
Okay, I'm just going to try one more time.
Okay.
What do we do with those cases where we've said that it is required? We have cases out there, right?
We do, Your Honor, but
So we just ignore them, distinguish them, overrule them?
Well, I think you distinguish them.
How?
Right? I think you distinguish them by exactly my response, that physical presence is an evolving concept. And just because you found physical presence in the past doesn't mean that it doesn't exist here. Right? It exists here because of this virtual connection, the virtual presence which Chad had between the city of Cincinnati. So I do think it's distinguished, and you certainly don't need to overrule those cases, but the evolution of time is taking us, right, to a place where no longer in the early 1900s or even in the 1950s where physical presence is required. And the Supreme Court cases have said that.
Let me ask it a little differently.
Okay.
Assume an Ohio State football player gets drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Sure.
Keeps their home in Columbus. Steelers play a game every year in Cleveland and one in Cincinnati. Who gets to tax his earnings for the whole year?
Well, Your Honor, if I may, that's a set of facts that's analogous to the Hillenmeyer case. And that, of course, is an interstate taxation question, and this is an intrastate taxation question.
I'm saying he lives in Columbus, and he's playing two games, one in Cleveland and one in Cincinnati. Does Cleveland or Cincinnati, under Section 29, get to tax him for every day?
Well, for Section 29, when it was for purposes of determining your principal place of work, would have determined the principal place of work as of March 9th. So, I'm sorry, the OSU football player was drafted by what team?
The Steelers.
Steelers. Well,
but he lives here. But lives here.
But lives here. Well, I would say that the principal place of work in that situation is in Pittsburgh, where the Steelers are. And in the Hillenmeyer case, of course, that was really a methodology case, as the city of Cleveland was using the duty day or the games played instead of the duty days method, right? But I think those aren't the facts of this case, because we don't have an Ohio resident whose principal place of business is in a different state. We have Shad.
Well, let's take
Ohio.
Mr. Shad.
Okay.
Okay. The tax rate's different in Blue Ash
it is.
Than in Cincinnati.
It's less.
It's less, more, doesn't matter to this question. Why doesn't Blue Ash have a right to tax him on the exact same dollars?
Well, actually, Blue Ash, as this court knows, is allowed under Section 718 to tax income or from its residents. So Blue Ash still has that right.
So it's to pay twice on the same income.
Well, we know, because it is in evidence, as attached to the motion to dismiss, from Shad's return, that Blue Ash actually never taxed Mr. Shad. We know that, and that is attached in the record. But I will say to this limitation question, how it is a limitation hypothetically, to expand on your question. Let's say that Shad, principal place of business, is in Cincinnati. During the pendency of the pandemic, he shifts to Blue Ash, where he lives. But then for 2 months, he goes to Columbus, where he works, but he goes there to take care of his parents. It's a limitation on Columbus, because Columbus can't tax for that two-month period of time.
Even though he's working from mom and dad's house.
That's correct. Also, with respect to...
Even though he's in Columbus and working from Columbus, Columbus can't tax him.
And why couldn't Columbus tax him?
Well, because it's not his place of residence. Columbus wouldn't have been deemed his place of residence. He would still be a resident of Blue Ash, and his principal place of work would still be in Cincinnati.
And he would be deemed to not have sufficient contacts with Columbus,
that's
correct?
Exactly right.
So that's an in personam argument.
Well, it's an example of how it's a limitation and how cities, and going back to Section 29 that starts with notwithstanding Section 718. So the legislature, through passing Section 29, it was requiring strict conformity with the statute. And so that's an example, just a common day example of how it is a limitation. I think Athens speaks clearly to that. I know Justice Donnelly authored the majority opinion in that case. I will also say that Section 20...
Constitutionally, could the legislature pass a law that allows Cincinnati to tax Youngstown residents? Is there any constitutional problem with that?
Well, as this court knows, that for legislation to be constitutional, it can't be arbitrary and unreasonable. And I would, unless there's a rational basis there, it seems
so,
like...
So rational basis would be the only limitation. What if the legislature decided that Youngstown residents were coming to Cincinnati all the time and using all their facilities so that Cincinnati ought to be able to tax Youngstown residents? So
well, I would go back to
our sort of rational basis for it. Is there any other constitutional limitation?
Well, honestly, under Article 2, Section 1,
no question.
Plenary power, I think there isn't.
There isn't. Okay.
So Wilmington, which has air traffic control facilities, okay, could tax anybody landing at one of the small airports in the state of Ohio. Wilmington could reach every person landing at a small airport in the state of Ohio, Wilmington.
And the question is, could the General Assembly pass that type of legislation?
Yes.
Well, if there... I believe, unless there's a prohibition against the General Assembly passing that type of legislation, and it isn't unreasonable or arbitrary, I would go back to say yes. I mean, we look at Article 2, Section 1, Article 8, Section 3, and then, of course, Article 18, Section 13, as to whether the General Assembly has the authority to act. We know it's complete power. We know they have the power to pass tax laws, and they have the power to limit. The question, of course, I know was talked about exhaustively with respect to the first argument of opposing counsel was, is this a limitation? I think Athens really made it clear that a regulation is a limitation. In fact, even in the court's opinion, I think it's paragraph 5, the court indicated in its majority opinion that the General Assembly first limited tax regulations when they passed Revised Code Section 1-8. So that was back in 1957. And House Bill 5 was also found to be a limitation, and Section 29 is the same.
Aren't we trying to get at, there are two steps for due process. First, if there's some minimum connection between the taxing authority, person, property, or transaction, so that's U.S. Miller Brothers versus Maryland. But then when we look at step two, which is fairly attributable to the taxpayer's activities in the taxing jurisdiction, We already have Willacy versus Cleveland Board of Income Tax Review. So I guess what I'm saying is, with all these analogies that are coming through, I mean, we still have to sort of ground ourselves with the concept, anyways, about the taxpayers' activities in the taxing jurisdiction. So when we talk about minimum contacts, or I think you know, we're getting a little bit away from Pennoyer because of the technology, but we still are sort of adhering to it by transferring it from physical presence to the taxpayers' activities in the taxing jurisdiction. Do I have that correct, or am I off on this?
Well, let me add that it's not just this technological piece, Your Honor, because we know that even in 2020, when Shad worked remotely for a period of time as a result of the executive order, that he still worked 51% of the days within the city of Cincinnati. So even in 2020, he was in Cincinnati more often than he wasn't. And there is no case that says that physical presence needs to be calculated on a day-to-day basis, right? This is an annual tax. So even if we look at 2020 as a 365-day period of time, we know that Shad was more present than not. That's another piece in addition to the being connected through technology, and also, of course, his principal place of work benefiting from the social services which are provided by Cincinnati, fire, safety, the like. So with respect to minimum contacts, I think if we look at that, which I believe we should from a state perspective, there's jurisdiction because he's an Ohio resident. But even if you look at the minimum contacts between Shad and the city of Cincinnati, they're more than there. We've got 51%. We've got the virtual presence. We've got the fact that his principal place of work is benefiting from the essential services. So there's a number of different ways there with respect to the minimum contacts, even if this court looks at it with respect to Shad and the municipality.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Earle.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, I think there's a few things that would be useful to clarify. First, jurisdiction must be established before we get into rational basis analysis of the underlying legislation, and that really is the core of the case. And the jurisdiction in question is not jurisdiction for the state of Ohio, because this is not a state tax. It's jurisdiction of the city of Cincinnati over someone who is a non-resident who performed work outside of the city of Cincinnati. Second, we are not and have never argued physical presence as the test, nor has this court ever accepted that minimum contacts is the test for municipal taxation. The test that this court has applied consistently is fiscal relation.
Thank you.
Counsel, I have a question.
Okay.
Before you leave, in your first argument, sometimes it sounded like you were talking as applied, and sometimes it sounded like facial challenge. Which one, or both?
I would say both. This is certainly an as-applied challenge with regard to Mr. Shad, but I think that the challenge that we're posing with regard to the constitutionality of the statute would be appropriately construed as a facial challenge.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision from the court.